Chapter 4. John. The Utilitarianism Conundrum Job. John woke up to the feeling of the well and truly shagged. He sat up, but there was no beautiful stranger in his bed. There was no one in the bedsit. He was alone. He briefly questioned his own sanity, but no. His place was fairly rank with the smell of stale sex. The towels on the floor were a dead loss, next to the towel nest, which clearly had been one of his more unnecessary ideas, was a small framed painting. It was the sort of thing that the Dutch used to slap out hundreds of years ago. It was a still life of a dead owl, a rind of cheese, and a bowl of fruit. John lay back on his bed and addressed the ceiling. "I also quite like chocolate." The room didn't answer. "Possibly thinks chocolates are dull." John put on his robe. He shuffled to the shower down the hall. He had to wait for Cheryl to finish the stall in the end. It was the only one that gave a properly hot shower. It was worth the wait. As she came out, she gave him a once-over and whistled. "Someone had a good night, you tart, you!" He couldn't hold back the smile that completely took over his face. "Yeah." He stepped into the shower and turned his face up into the blast. He spent an embarrassingly long time just standing there. He got dressed. He put on his smartest jumper, in case his stalker decided to drop in again. He went for a walk. It was raining, which made sense. This was England, and John was English, and he couldn't stop smiling. He hadn't even expected or intended for that to happen. He'd gone to sleep on the floor. The Alpha had shown up looking like he hadn't eaten or slept in a week. John had figured giving him the bed just made sense. Only to wake up to the best erotic dream he'd ever had. Except it hadn't been a dream. It had been wild. It had been fantastic. That moment then was when John realized that he had no idea what the Alpha's name was. When he'd been in heat, he had some sort of vague excuse, but he hadn't been in heat the previous evening. He'd made soup and hadn't managed to ask the most basic question. They'd slowly screwed for hours. John hadn't been in heat then. He had an image of himself pausing and asking, "Excuse me, before you shove up in again, how about a name?" Somehow the thought that he was an enormous, slutty tart fucking a stranger and not even bothering to get their name made him smile. He hardened at this new image of himself. He'd always been careful in his clubbing days. Not remotely any sort of slapper. He'd always kept hold of his drink that he bought for himself. He hadn't wanted to go off with the alphas that approached him. In school, he hadn't wanted to be that Omega. The one that everyone talked about and who got up to no good. He'd had his fair share of serially monogamous relationships that never went anywhere. Now he was aching from the pounding the Alpha had given him, and all he could do was smile. He was still smiling when the chip and pin machine wouldn't let him buy lettuce. An Alpha with gorgeous brown eyes helped him scan his veg. He played up the whole Omega can't do anything with machines thing. She offered him her number. For a moment, he reveled in his new identity as a super slutty tart. He was irresistible to all. Then he blushed, because that was kind of a prick tease move. "Yeah, I'm kind of not available right now." He was aching from how available he'd been. She shrugged and winked at him, easy in her skin. Maybe next life. He was still happy for no good reason when the phone in a red phone box rang at him while he walked by. But with his arms loaded down, it was one form of awe that he could do without. He was walking by the RBS in the corner, and the ATM phone went off. He gave in at the next phone. Hello? A smooth voice said, There's a security camera on the building to your left. Do you see it? John was acutely aware of the carton of milk next to his shin. Who is this? Who is speaking? Do you see the camera directly above you? John looked up. Can you see it? The camera turned away. There's another camera on the building opposite where you're standing. The camera pointed away. And now, finally, for a little bit of flourish, there on top of the building on your right, the camera pointed away. John officially didn't care about his milk. How are you doing this? I've sent a car for you, Dr. Watson. I'd make some kind of threat, but I'm sure that your situation is pretty clear to you. The line went dead. A black car pulled up in front of the phone booth. John struggled into the vehicle with his groceries. A dark-haired alpha with a scent like a spring hilltop was playing a first-person shooter game, one of those handheld game machines. John heaved the groceries at her. Hello, I'm John. What's your name? The alpha shot someone in the game. She smiled. They took away my name and gave me a number. Ah, John nodded. I don't suppose you could tell me where we're going. You don't suppose correctly. She killed a few more pixel people. Right. They pulled up to an office complex. John really wished he had his revolver. He was really glad he didn't have his revolver. He brought his groceries. He was just a doctor with groceries. He was small and defenseless. He smiled. Could you lend a hand? The alpha didn't stop tapping away at her game. She did not help him. So much for his irresistible slutty tart powers. They took the down elevator. The room opened on an episode of Spooks, or one of those American shows. The walls were covered in large LCD screens that displayed CCTV footage. People with headsets were walking between the desks, talking at each other. John couldn't make out what they were saying. A slight Omega bounced up out of a chair. Colonel Moran, where are your manners? You should be taking Dr. Watson's groceries. Colonel Moran, named after all, put away her game, and now she helped him. The Omega looked strangely familiar. Excuse me, but do I know you? He smelled like a battlefield after the battle, when the smoke lingered over the unexploded bombs. Ah, now, I'm going to have to take my publicist out and have her shot. You're not knowing who I am. Why, I'm Dr. James Moriarty, Ph.D. in criminology, head of this wee little government branch. He put his fingers to his lips. As to which government? Bit of a joint effort. But I'm the thief-taker general. Silly little title, I know, but it seems to play well. He swayed a gold-headed cane from hand to hand. There's my reality show where the action happens. 5 series running. I'm told I broadcast a series 1 last year. Broke an all-time BBC America record. Then there's my in-depth investigative show. And this year, something in the fiction realm. But we're not here to talk about me. Lights flashed on the monitors behind him, and people with tablets spoke to each other urgently. Dr. Moriarty's head moved from side to side. He looked like he was tasting the air. He spun an office chair around and rolled it towards John across the industrial floor. Have a seat. John did not sit. Now that you know me, let's see. He flipped through a small handheld journal. He whistled. Look at this. You petitioned 3 times to have the ban on Omegas in the military lifted. using the Omega Medics in the Great War as a precedent. Quite the public-minded Omega, aren't you? He turned another page. Ah, wounded, protecting a busload of children from men with guns. He grinned. You should get a medal. I don't need a medal. Why am I here? John spoke firmly. He was in a DMZ. He knew exactly what that felt like. Fair enough. Oh, look at this. A writer. I could use a new ghostwriter from my book line. Moriarty smiled very charmingly. But what I really want to know is what is your relationship with Sherlock Holmes? Who? John did not wonder just when his life had become a Bond movie. He knew exactly when that had happened. He shrugged. He was a Bond Omega. Hopefully the one that made it to the end of the picture. Never met. Sherlock Holmes, you said? Maybe you know him as, Captain Alonius Basil? Mr. Cornelius Strunk? No. He flipped a page in the folder. Ah, Johan Sigurdsson, that famous Norwegian explorer and mountain climber. No? Altamont Jones? Ho-ho! Dr. James Moriarty, the scamp! And here we look nothing alike. No, he shrugged. I can see none of those are ringing a bell. See, Moriarty bounced over next to John and sat on the desk, his legs swinging. That surprises me a bit, because when they ran the DNA test after your little incident at Baron Gruner's, that random camper you shagged in the woods was none other than Mr. Sherlock Holmes. International man of mystery. Moriarty winked. As I'm a gentle soul. I won't tell you how I got the sample, but my methods were very in-depth. He wriggled slightly. John shrugged. His shoulders may as well have been on strings. And what is that when it's at home? Who is Sherlock to you? He shouldn't have asked, but of course someone like the Alpha would have something amazingly wrong with him. Moriarty rocked on his feet. Oh, I'm as close to a friend as he can have. I'm his enemy. He might call me his arch-enemy, but he does so love to be dramatic. But I guess you don't know that. Like I said, John spread his hands. I don't know him. Ah, Colonel, look at how he lies. It's a thing of beauty, it is. Moriarty spun the chair in front of him. What I mean is that he's a thief from a family of thieves. Odd. He leaned closer to John. I'd have expected a bit more surprise. John shrugged. I don't remember much about that night after Adelbert drugged me. Moriarty held up a device. Behind him all the monitors shifted to pictures of Adelbert. His hands were bound behind his back. He'd been shot in the head. Maybe this will shake something loose for you. Baron Adelbert Gruner won't be going to trial. Holmes's gang of miscreants were set to frame him for insurance fraud when you came along and upset that apple cart. Moriarty spun the office chair in front of him. Seems that after meeting you, Sherlock took a bit of further offense and decided to do the job proper. Between the hours of 3 and 4 last night, Baron Gruner was shot execution style in the room where he was planning to have a bit of fun with you. John hadn't looked at the clock at the time, but he was fairly certain that Sherlock had been shagging him senseless between the hours of 3 and 4 a.m. and quite possibly 1 and 2. He shifted onto his right foot at the memory. Moriarty's curved lips grew even sharper edged. John coolly met his eyes. It couldn't have happened to a nicer rapist. And why do you think it was this Sherlock? Or that he has anything to do with me? Like I said, the drugs Gruner gave me left me pretty out of it. Interesting you should ask. Moriarty clicked the device again. Blurry pictures from a security camera showed a man walking out of Adelbert's library. That might possibly have been Sherlock. If Sherlock hadn't been embedded in John's ass at the time, would you be able to make this man out in a lineup if you were given the chance? Moriarty tasted the air again. Now, as you might know. Really, I will have to kill my publicist if you don't. There are fairly substantial rewards for taking persons like this Mr. Holmes. Why, Moriarty turned back to the folder. He's wanted for theft. Another several pages. Grift. More pages. And murder in over a dozen countries. He's a very dangerous psychopath. He handed the folder to Colonel Moran, who slid it into John's sack with the peas and carrots. He's got no morals whatsoever. I'll keep that in mind. John shrugged. Can I go now? My milk is getting warm. Sure now, just remember. Moriarty winked at him. I'll be watching you. John reflected that at least he got a ride back to his bedsit out of the deal. He put away his groceries. He looked at the owl by his bed. He said to himself, he's a thief and a murderer. He did not look at his duffel with the revolver. If he were a proper character from a Bond story, he'd have special equipment to check for bugs. He gathered up his laundry and headed for the machines downstairs. His towels were a right mess. He'd be finished just in time to head for his locum shift at the C&W. He spent much of the morning wondering which of the people that came to see him was actually a government agent type. Some of the hypochondriacs possibly were just hypochondriacs. Then he was called to the trauma ward to assist with two brothers having a small domestic with an axe, and he had other things to think about. After a never-ending day, he stumbled home, but there was no beautiful stranger perched in his window. He hadn't intended on opening the folder. It sat large on his bed, which still smelled like the Alpha. It smelled faintly like Sherlock Holmes. Naming him didn't make the whole thing any less hot. He wasn't too old for adventure. He was not going to open it. It was certainly detailed. Was possibly entirely fictional. According to this, the Holmes family had quite a few names and quite a colorful history. John stared for a long time at what looked like a surveillance photo. Tall Charity Vernet in country tweeds next to her equally elegant bonded Sigur Holmes, alias Jack Pendergast, alias Rex Stout, alias Arsène Lupin, alias... He had a great many aliases. A forger and a thief. Murderers. Criminals. Beautiful people. There was a taller boy standing in front of them looking directly at the camera, smiling. Sherlock stood off a little to one side. He was looking at something off camera. His expression was so incredibly alive in him. John pulled it out and put it in his wallet. It was a silly thing to do. He and Sherlock weren't, well... He hadn't even known Sherlock's name. He kept reading. If all of this were true, then Sherlock Holmes and his brother Mycroft were very bad men. There were no photos of Sherlock as an adult. Blurry crime scene shots, that was it. He made himself not look at the photo in the wallet. He made himself dinner. A box lasagna that was low in sodium and promised good nutritional value. He ate a few bites and put the rest in the mini-fridge under the sink. No one woke him up, slowly fucking him. He woke up to reality. He wasn't smiling. He took a shower. He had a cuppa. He headed for his morning shift at the clinic. He opened the front door, and the world exploded in flashbulbs that had him battlefield calm. There was a wall of cameras. Reporters were shouting his name. One journalist shouted, Dr. Watson, Dr. Watson, how does it feel to be a hero? Another yelled, what made you save those children? Another called out, has the Pope contacted you to thank you for saving those nuns? Another yelled, what is it like to be a role model for Omegas? John said, what? Which is how the headline read, Shy Hero of the Day, with a picture of him holding down crossfire to allow a school bus full of children to head down a rutted road, with an accompanying picture of him looking completely gobsmacked. He had been shot. There had been a bus and children, and a Buddhist nun, for that matter. For the life of him, John had no idea how someone would have gotten a picture of him, or why it was coming out now. John's life began again. He had a nickname in the press, Johnny Hero, which wasn't bad as nicknames went. When he thought it would die down, another photo would show up, and the frenzy would start all over again. He was asked to appear on The Big Breakfast. He sat in an oversized chair while a twink asked him about the worst day of his life. Sherlock did not appear in his window. That was day one. Day two, he went on Morning Today and tried to talk about the plight of children in Somalia. He ended up talking about if he was seeing anyone. He blushed and answered, no comment. He appeared on In Depth Tonight and smiled painfully while the host twittered about his dual threat of doctor and writer. He blushed and smiled. He thought about Sherlock. Day three, the beta with the axe was telling the Daily Mail that John Watson had broken his back. Day four, he appeared on Panoramic View. He tried not to sound like a gormless idiot. He did not entirely succeed. He was handed a Gold Guild invitation to an MSF fundraiser that night. John found himself smiling. He couldn't have felt more like a Bond Omega if he'd tried. He wondered if he'd see Sherlock. It was the sort of thing that would happen to him now. He put on his only suit. He took it off again and steamed it. He put on his blue shirt with a blue tie, but blue was supposed to indicate a lack of interest. He put on his white shirt with the red tie. Red was supposed to mean passion. He swallowed. Whether or not he believed anything in that binder, Sherlock Holmes was a thief. There was no future in this. He needed to be sensible. He put on a brown shirt with a brown tie. That should mean neutral. He was being neutral. He didn't want to be neutral. He wanted a life of adventure and meaning again. He didn't take the tube to the gala. He took a cab. He really couldn't afford it. He did it anyway. He presented himself to the gala. He felt like a bag of potatoes next to everyone. He wasn't exactly sure what he was supposed to be doing there. He certainly didn't have any money to give. Strangers he didn't know smiled at him. An American Omega woman in thick glasses waved a wine glass in his direction. Oh, look at you! Why, you're Dr. John Watson. I've been seeing all around on television. She waved her glass around. And so clever to be a doctor. I thought about being a doctor, but I've not got the brains for it. Silly little Omega me. She waved her glass some more. Predictably, wine sloshed out the front and against his chest. Oh, I'm so clumsy. She patted his chest. A little soda water'll get that right out. He flinched away from her and headed for the loo. He spent a long time staring at himself in the mirror. He gave himself a lecture about reality. His reality was he got wine spilled on him. Reality was that he was shot. Reality was Sherlock had gotten his leg over and left. That was fine. It was good. Sherlock was a dangerous man. John needed to accept reality. He cleaned himself up as well as he could and comforted himself that it was a brown suit. Brown didn't show stains much. He stood by a wall and listened to the speeches and watched the entertainment like a fifth former wallflower. Hello, John. Pavlovian. He felt himself get hard just hearing that voice. What are you doing here? John looked away from the Chinese acrobats doing silly death tricks with spears and looked up at Sherlock grinning at him. John grinned back. Suddenly Sherlock hissed. I'm taking a break. I can take breaks. Everyone takes breaks. He tapped his ear. He was wearing a small earbud. John made himself look away. The acrobats were doing something. I met a friend of yours, by which I mean your archenemy, James Moriarty. Sherlock sneered. He said that you're a dangerous psychopath. He's trying to catch you. Sociopath. I'm a highly functioning sociopath. He does that to annoy me. Sherlock moved closer to John. Another couple drifted by them. The American and another Omega. The Omega man murmured, "Business before pleasure. Tick-tock, tick-tock." Sherlock grumbled, "Dull. This job is dull." He took 3 steps away from John. He stopped. He gave him a look that might mean that John was supposed to follow. John followed. They left the main area behind. An alpha security guard almost stopped them on their way. Sherlock staggered drunkenly against John. His weight shifted down onto John. "Looking for a bit of privacy with Mimega?" He winked broadly. The guard laughed. "Right enough, but you can't do that here." Sherlock squeezed John's arm, which meant John had no idea. "Fine. What would a Bond Omega do?" John swallowed. He said, "When was the last time you had a checkup?" He pulled away from Sherlock and felt the man's neck. He pinched the skin. "Does that hurt?" "Ah! Yeah. Is that bad?" The alpha guard moved slightly away from him. John pinched another spot in his neck. "And here?" "Oh, fuck! What's wrong?" The alpha blinked. "You have a dangerously distended lymphatic inflammation. We need to get your head down right now." John felt this was fairly safe advice. He pushed the alpha into a chair and pushed his head between his legs. "Deep breaths. Do you feel dizzy?" "Oh." The alpha took deeper and deeper breaths. Sherlock had disappeared somewhere. "You're doing fine." There was the sound of an argument in the next room. The guard lurched to his feet. "I've got to..." He stumbled. John held him up with one arm. "You'll be fine. Just deep breaths." The guard nodded. John heard the unmistakable sound of gunfire. The guard ran towards the sound. John stood there uncertainly. Sherlock reappeared. "You were supposed to follow me." John followed. Sherlock slipped into a room marked Main Archives. What followed next was not really what John expected. Not that he'd been expecting anything in particular, but it hadn't been to pull various binders off of shelves and replace sets of pages with other sets of pages. The pages were full of pictures of art, brochures, and clippings about art shows. John pulled out a page about an art show of the stars and put in a different page about an art show of the stars. "What are we doing?" "We're making bad provenance. As I said, dull." Even the door lock was a simple double ball mechanism. Sherlock clipped in several more pages, which seemed to be it. They left the archives, which was when it got interesting. It seemed the acrobats from earlier didn't like bad provenance. There was a fight that was a confusion of arms and legs and fists. It was a bit glorious. Sherlock had acquired a writing crop from somewhere, and seeing him use it was a bit glorious, too. One of the acrobats, a slender alpha woman, said, "I simply want what is my property." The fire alarm went off, and it seemed it was time to run for it. They ran for it out a back entrance and kept running for a confusing series of twists. They ended up in some sort of loading dock area, piled high with wooden pallets and drifts of wadded-up paper. Sherlock leaned back against the wall. "I said it was dull." Dull? John was wishing desperately he'd had a bit more cardio in his life. I have no idea what just happened. He supposed he should feel concerned that he was now possibly a criminal, but all he could think was how amazing he felt. How could you think that was dull? That was amazing. Bizarre. Amazing. When you did the thing. He waved his hands in the air to indicate the writing crop. "What you did with the guard was a bit good." Sherlock looked at him. "But I didn't like seeing you put your hands on him." In the faint security light, Sherlock's face was a contrast of light and dark. John licked his lips. "Well, I..." it wasn't so much that he moved towards Sherlock, or that Sherlock moved towards him. They were a pair of magnets. Their lips had to meet. They kissed with teeth and grappling shoves. It was all a bit out of control. He thought about his talk with himself. He tried to focus on reality and real things. And had he really just followed Sherlock into some sort of crime, where he had no idea what was happening? John pulled his face away from Sherlock. No, we have to... I can't keep... We've got to stop doing... Oh, God, keep doing that. Sherlock grinned into his next kiss and kept doing that. He kept doing a great deal more of that. At any moment, someone could come around the corner. John groaned and gripped the slats of the pallet hard enough to drive splinters into his palms. After they'd more than done it, he slumped over the pallet. Sherlock wasn't much better. He slumped over John. That was... Oh, amazing. Sherlock breathed in his ear. You know you say that out loud. John's face was pressed against the wood. He mumbled into it. I'll stop. No. Sherlock pulled away from him. You can keep doing that. So much for reality. John shook his head and pulled up his trousers. There were streaks of cum and lines on his shirt. His trousers' wrinkles had wrinkles on them. Sherlock made a harsh noise and tapped his ear. What? He paced the narrow dock. Fine. Sherlock looked somewhere over John's head and said, I need to go. You should come. He made a complicated hand gesture and watched the air over John's head. John was still blinking his thoughts of yes and no, but I have a life and reality. He didn't have time to starve those thoughts of their oxygen. He couldn't smother the sensible voice before Sherlock was gone. Right. He walked away and didn't look back at all. He went to the nearest tube station, which was more than a bit of a walk. It gave him time to think. He had a blister on his right foot. His hip ached. He hung up his suit, which was more than a lot ruined. He found a business card in his suit pocket and vaguely remembered the Omega patting his chest. It was for a bakery in Nice, France. There was a note on the back. Because he's a moron and won't tell you where to go. I.A. He tapped it against his lips. They were still sore from Sherlock's bitten kisses. He made himself stop. He put on his gym jams. He lay in his narrow bed. He stared up at the ceiling. He very determinedly decided that staying was the right, sensible, rational, responsible, non-criminal thing to do. In the morning, the reporters were back. This time they were yelling, How do you respond to allegations that your celebrity is a sham? Hey, Johnny Hoax, who did you pay to fake the photos? By midday, he received a call that his shift at the clinic had been canceled. All his shifts. On the second day, he got catcalls. You've been boffed by the Boffin of Crime. How does he rate? As he stood in line at Tesco's, the Daily Mail and the Daily Express, headlined with a grainy picture of him, draped over a crate, clearly getting his brains shagged out of him by the shadowy figure behind him. John Watson was that Omega. The one people in line whispered about while he tried to get the damned chip and pin machine to take his damned card. He was out of funds. He walked down the street. The payphone rang. He went in. Oh, Johnny Hero, are you enjoying your fall from grace? Sorry I had to puff you up first, but your life was such a sad mess that it needed a lift. No, it doesn't have to be sad like this. That nice little nun could come forward. One of the charming orphans could get on a plane flight. And the world would take you back into its heart, just like you'd never left. John's fingers tightened around the plastic of the receiver. I'm thinking our Sherlock gave you a little something before he left. Moriarty laughed. Well, judging by those pictures, he gave you more than a little, as I have good reason to remember. Now all you have to do to make all this go away is give me a little help with my problem, and then I'll make all your problems go away. John looked at the camera blinking at him from above. You know, when I was in school, I remember you couldn't see out of a phone booth like this. Every square surface was decorated in cards advertising exotic Omega models, who date for a small fee. Swedish maids, bondage, golden showers, they all had their hook. I had this one maid who collected the cards whenever he saw a new one. He smiled wryly at the camera. I'm not that kind of Omega. So loyal for so little reason. Are sexy. He's not capable of being so tender of you. Your problem is you're failing to see how much worse it can get. You still got a medical license. You have not yet gone to prison for fucking some little orphan. Moriarty giggled. That little tyke could catch a plane tomorrow. And really, what's the bad in doing the right thing for the authorities? We're the government. John hung up. He walked away. He picked up a Times. He read the recent revelation that the photos that catapulted Dr. John Watson to fame were clever photo manipulation. He scanned down. The eminent criminologist, Dr. James Moriarty, the thief-taker general himself, was available for comment. When the photos came to light, I was, of course, skeptical. For reasons I cannot disclose due to an ongoing investigation, I've had John Watson under close surveillance as a result of his intimate connection to Sherlock Holmes, the crime boffin. It is my belief that this was part of an elaborate plan to potentially defraud the MSF of millions of dollars in donations. You can be assured that my offices are fully on the case. The authorities announced. John didn't read their announcement. John let the paper fall to the ground. He walked for a long time. There were 48 messages on his mobile. He was pretty sure one of them was Harry. He wondered if Moriarty had had a little conversation with her, too. He went home. He pushed his way through the reporters. He went inside. He looked around his furnished bedsit. He didn't even own his own kettle. Almost meditatively, he rolled up his few clothes. They fit into his duffel, even adding an ugly owl statue and a small painting. It wasn't much. He wrapped the revolver in a sock and slid it into the small of his back. He opened the window. He slid down the rain spout. He walked away. He went off the rails of his life. No, that had happened when he was shot. He wasn't sure what this was, but he felt pretty good about it as he walked away down the street.